We mustn't let the great national debate over immigration distract us from the vital roles that immigrants play in our country, and we are going to do that in the company of a person with a very interesting background who's focusing on just what these people do. She is a former broadcast journalist and award-winning in that regard, who has now become quite an artist and writer, famous for her portrait work. Betsy Ashton has put together quite a show. Portraitsofimmigrants.com is the website. And Betsy, what is in this program?
Well, Jim, I spent the last 2 years actually going around, starting right in my neighborhood, because I live in New York City, which is filled with immigrants. I mean, more people are foreign-born here than in any other city on the planet. And I was hearing all of this, you know, bad now thing and coming out of that election about how bad immigrants are in trouble and prison and all this kind of stuff. And I'm saying, wait a minute. I live among all of these people and work among them and must see 100 immigrants a day in the course of going on the subway and doing business and painting and going back and forth to my studio. And they're nothing like that. In fact, they're very good neighbors. And it just occurred to me, maybe the story is not quite right. The way I see it, it's kind of like saying, oh, bad immigrants, we're going to just keep them all out of the country. It's kind of like saying, well, a plane crashed today, so we're just going to ground all the planes and not let any more in the country. When we know, you know, in fact, when a plane crashes, a lot of people die, and it's terrible. And it makes news for days on end. I mean, I was in Washington, remember, in 1977 when that Air Florida flight crashed into the Potomac River and it took out the 14th Street Bridge. And it was 4 days when they were bringing the bodies out of the frozen bodies out of the river. And it was a huge story and it was horrible.
Yes.
But why don't we ground all the planes? And we don't do it because we know that 8 million people landed safely that day and the day before and the day before and the day before that. And the world is filled with a lot of retired pilots and flight attendants. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that air transportation is a good thing. And as I see it, that's the story of the immigrants, even today's immigrants. But I really set out saying, well, maybe America's forgotten who we are and forgotten who the immigrants are, because a lot of people don't maybe see them every day. And so maybe what I'll just do is go out and I will paint and interview and sketch, beginning with people I know. And I first went to the guy who, you know, I'd get coffee from, because he had a little espresso bar on the way from my home into the 5-block commute to where my studio is. Both of them are in old lofts and old factories. And his name was Eddie from Sao Paulo, Brazil. And I said, hey, Eddie, why did you come here? And he said, well, he said, you know, my parents immigrated to Brazil during World War II to get out of Italy and war-torn Europe. And they opened a couple little pizza parlors. And he said, you know, after the 8th bloody robbery, they just had it, and they closed up shop and moved into the safer countryside. But I was a young man. I needed a job, and frankly, at Betsy, I like the big city. So he wanted to come to New York in the worst way. He put out on the internet, does anybody need a pizza man? And lo and behold, somebody in suburban New York did, and that got him here, legally, and he's the happiest citizen now that you'd ever want to meet. But he was one, and the Ukrainian woman who owns a doggy daycare center that's a few blocks from my front door, which is where my dog goes to get groomed, I said, you know, Lydia, you know, where are you from? She said, well, I grew up in Kiev, Ukraine, and I said, what made you come here? Well, in her case, her father was an economist, and he had written something that the then-communist government didn't like, and they said to him, oh, well, you can spend the rest of your life in an insane asylum, or you can divorce your wife and leave the country. The business about divorcing his wife was that Ukrainians weren't allowed to leave the country. The only people who were allowed to leave were Jewish people. And so he had to divorce his wife and sell her jewelry in order to pay for that and to pay a dowry to a Jewish family so that he could marry their daughter to get his ticket out of the country and come here, and his whole family broken up. That's the kind of stuff that people were telling me that happened in their childhood and in their lives that brought them here. And it just went on and on as I went around to different people. And I wanted to get refugees because I didn't know any and that I was aware of. And I, through churches, I found a wonderful Afghan refugee who says, "Betsy, you know, I didn't grow up to the sound of music. I grew up to the sound of bombs and everything beautiful I saw get blown apart." And he's one of the people who remembers the Taliban because he was a kid in Kabul. And, you know, they'd have soccer games, and then these guys would come in with their pickup truck in the middle of the game or at halftime, and they'd push people out, hang them up on the goalposts, or shoot them in the back of the head. That was his childhood. And, of course, when the Americans came in, he said, "We were just thrilled, absolutely thrilled to get rid of these horrible, horrible people and this horrible, you know, government that they were forcing on us." His sisters couldn't go to school, couldn't learn anything. And so he became an interpreter, as did his older brothers, helping our troops. Well, after a while, the Taliban is in the shadows, and other people like him who had been helping started disappearing. And the next thing he knew, he was a target. His family was a target. And his brothers got out first and became refugees here. And then it took him another 4 years before he could get refugee status. He lives up in the Syracuse area in New York, where he works for Interfaith Works, I believe is the name of it, but it's definitely interfaith. All of the churches and the mosque and the synagogues, all the different religious groups in Syracuse put together and have this organization which helps other refugees mm-hmm. and other immigrants to settle, to learn the language, to learn how to set up a bank account, to find a place to live, how to get a good job, and, you know, and how to get themselves settled. In addition to working full-time at that, he is getting a master's degree from Syracuse University, from the Maxwell School in Public Administration. And he says, "Betsy, you know, I've seen horrible government. I've seen the worst of the worst. It was so terribly corrupt over there." And he said, "All I want to do is to help people. I really like helping people, and I want to make a good government that works." And the sad story about him is that he's got two younger sisters and a younger brother over there. They can't get them out now because, of course, they're Muslim. And now there is, you know, it's really tight for anybody who happens to be a Muslim. This man is in no way a threat. This man is a decent person in the country. But that's his story. There, I can go on and on. I will tell you, I have been so touched, Jim, because the people that I have met are so, they become like family. They're warm and wonderful. They're from all different countries and religions and cultures. Some, like Abdul, have only been here a little while. He's only been here 4 years. Others have been here 20 and 30 years. But they are the current wave of immigrants, either from south of the border or from a lot of Asian countries, less Europeans than in the past, and some from Africa, and certainly some from the Middle Eastern countries. And the surprising thing to me, my takeaway from all of this, is that the stories I'm hearing from these individuals are so much like the stories that we heard of immigrants from the past, mm-hmm. of the generations that we celebrate. The only difference is they come from a slightly different place. English may not have been their initial language, and they might have a slightly different tint to their skin. Some do, some don't. Most of them came here with documentation, but I did get to some that didn't, because I said, I've got to talk to somebody that came across the Rio Grande. I have to find, particularly wanted to find a woman who had done that. And, you know, I didn't know how I was going to find anybody. So I was over at my coffee bar, and I was talking to one of my neighbors, and I said, how am I going to find somebody who's undocumented, who crossed the Rio Grande? I mean, do you know anybody like that? And he looked at me and he said, yeah. I said, really? I said, I'd really like it to be a woman, if possible. And he said, yeah. And I said, do you know how I could get in touch with this woman? And do you think she might talk to me? And I said, you know, I'm not going to hurt anybody. I'm willing to paint her in shadow, or I don't have to use her name, but I just want to know why would somebody do that? And he said, come home with me. And lo and behold, I went to this house, and the housekeeper is from Guatemala. And why did she come here? Well, he translated for me. He speaks Spanish. Her English is not very good. But she, 24 years ago, was abandoned by her husband and left with their 5 children, ages 3 to 16. Well, she did what any mother would do. She went out to immediately get a job, but the only thing she was qualified for was to do people's laundry. And so she said it wasn't even enough to feed them. She said, my children were malnourished. And she had to do something quickly to earn more money, but there just wasn't anything that a woman without any great education in Guatemala could do. She was given a choice. People said, you can become a prostitute, or you can leave the country, try to get somewhere where you can earn decent money in the States and send it back. Well, she said, indecent money, no. No way. She's a good, God-fearing woman. She was not going to become a prostitute. So she got a coyote, as they call them, someone to take her up through Mexico on that treacherous journey, because it's in a lawless situation. You cross the Rio Grande at night. You walk through the brush for 2 days and 2 nights, and a lot of people die. They luckily at 2 o'clock in the morning after the second day, second night, 2 o'clock in the morning, they got to a road and a bus picked them up. She will not tell me anything more about that trip because she said, and she just says, no, just bad, bad. And frankly, from other people that I've interviewed, yes, it's true that these women get raped. I was told they pack their contraceptivos because they know it can happen. And it's lawless. Who are you going to complain to? You know, there you are in their hands. She got to New York, and she got in with a community of people who were from Guatemala, and the men were working in construction. And what she did, one day they had finished working on a townhouse, and the owner said, oh, got to get this grit wall out of here. Let's get somebody in to clean it. And they said, we know just the person. And they brought her over. And she did a magnificent job. And the owner said, I hired her on the spot. I said, would you like to be our housekeeper? So she started to work for this couple that had this lovely place that they just fixed up. And 4 years later, she says, I've got to go back. My children are going wild. And what was happening, the oldest daughter had just turned 21. She sold the dining room furniture to buy clothes for herself. And the twin boys in their teens now had fungus all over their feet. And she says, just a mess. So she goes back on that same horrible trip to get back down to Guatemala. She gets the kids all cleaned up. Obviously, the family that was supposed to be looking after them wasn't doing a job. She gets them all sorted out, all cleaned up. Everything's fine. But 4 months later, they're broke again. She has no money. And there is still no way in the world that she can earn a decent living in Guatemala. She says, I've got to go back. This time her little boy is now 6, and he grabs her around the leg and says, Mommy, take me back. And so she does. She makes the trip the third time, coming that awful trip, keeping little boy quiet, and they get back to New York. Well, her employers are thrilled to have her back, absolutely thrilled, and they help her find a little apartment, and she gets her little boy in public school in New York City. And she works for them. She also gets a job working and cleaning the house across the street, right in the neighborhood. And so now she's earning fairly decent money, sending it back for her other children. And the years pass, she also becomes a lay preacher in an evangelical church. And she meets the community. She gets to know a lot of people. And one of the things she does is she saves her money and she gets a good lawyer. And 1 week after I finished her portrait, she got her green card. And what did she do? She flew back to Guatemala and got off that plane with presents, and she hugged the 4 children that she had not touched, Jim, in 20 years. Now imagine that. She had supported them all that time. She met their spouses. she met a couple little grandchildren that she finally held for the first time, and she continued to support them. That's someone from Guatemala. And I tell you, when people see her portrait and when they hear this story, there are a lot of people who have tears in their eyes. And I just sort of, I've given some tours to people in the gallery, and I've asked them, now, what would you do in that situation? Can you imagine? What would you do with a choice like that? You know, you don't have the time to fill out paperwork and try to get money together to try to get proper documents and all of that. Your children are starving. What would you do? And then I ask the question, is she a criminal? Was she a criminal when she didn't have the documentation? Where was the criminal intent? Anyway.
It's one of many amazing tales that you can see, and you can see now through April the 22nd at the Riverside Church in Morningside Heights, New York. This program, Portraits of Immigrants, has been on display in Upper West Side Manhattan. It is now at the Riverside Church in Morning Heights. This is at 120th Street and 490 Riverside Drive near the Columbia University Morningside Heights campus and Grant's Tomb. And our guest is the artist. She is Betsy Ashton, and again, the website, portraitsofimmigrants.com.